focuses mostly on physical side, so breaking into buildings, stealing stuff, getting back out again. I have used and leveraged elevators in that line of work a whole lot, and it's really funny. Howard?
Hi, everybody. I'm Howard. I'm an elevator consultant, former inspector. I'm not a member of either of the two fantastic local unions that New York City has. I'm frequently found in Atlantic City and Las Vegas in the casinos, and my favorite beer is cheap beer.
Right on. And are you here representing any particular employer today?
The standard disclaimer applies. The views and opinions expressed herein do not represent those of my employer, and I am not here representing Payne Elevator despite the name.
All right. One other caveat. This is serious fucking stuff.
So most of you probably ride elevators every day if you're from New York City, and most of those trips happen without incident. It's very rare for a passenger to be injured by an elevator, but it can happen. Most of the injuries that occur in this field are people like me that are working either on the car top, in the hoistway, or the motor room, or the pit.
Yeah.
Now, industrial accidents aside, elevators are generally safe, and we don't want to give people the impression that that's not the case. So, with that being said, though, if you're messing with them, there are various failure modes that can result in grievous bodily harm. In this case, you might notice there's a leg in the one-inch gap between the car sill and the landing sill. Yeah. Amazingly, this leg was saved.
Yeah.
And, of course, another disclaimer for everybody here. The introduction we got said it pretty adequately, but please leave the hotel pen alone. And they do have cameras in all the elevators, as you're probably aware. So
all being monitored by the NSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because you think you're smart enough to be like, well, I'm no dumbass, I'm not going to die. I'll just fool around a little bit. It'll be okay.
Right. What's wrong with a little harmless fun, right?
Yeah. We should have volume on the laptop. Do we have volume on that laptop, soundboard? So, like, that's funny, right? That's, you know, the helicopter trick.
The escalator helicopter on YouTube. Yeah.
So, you know, one kid did it right. Somebody else? Maybe not so much.
Hey, it looks fun, right? It's all fun and games until you wind up with a felony criminal mischief charge. Cause thousands of dollars in damage.
Yeah, so just because you think this is funny and you saw it and you learned a little bit, you're not a fucking professional. We are. Well, he is. I stayed at Holiday Inn Express last night. But he is a... This is his jam. He's trained for this. What you're about to see, some of this is stuff that looks fun, but you really, even if you've heard stories of people doing it, you probably shouldn't. Trust us, please. So, a little introduction to elevator tech, because a lot of you might be kind of the train spotter type who's very interested in how certain systems are and how they work. You might not be aware that elevators, even though we ride them all the time, there's a lot of variety on the back end, but you can fundamentally think of them as coming in two flavors. Elevators are either overhead traction, where they're hoisted by cables, the industry would call them ropes, or they are driven from below by a hydraulic piston. So you have traction elevators and hydro elevators. And there's a lot of brake head traction or by means of something in the pit pushing up. Now, what gets interesting about this, however, is people think that the elevator is really, it's a fixed machine. You're in this room, and it must be hoisted on all sides, and it's all affixed, and okay, and this is driving up, and it's really anchored in there. This is what is actually just moving the cab positionally. This is actually not moving the cab. This is what is guiding the cab in the hoistway. Elevator cabs, again, look at the slides that are going to be on the wiki for more details. The elevator cab is just guided gently by two rails. Rails and rollers on the sides are guiding this cab up and down the hoistway. It's not anchored in all four corners. The actual car sling itself is really minor. It's not a complicated machine. You're interacting with something that is just drifting up and down very lightly. And in this hoistway, it's simply stabilized by some rails. Where you usually interact with something that Howard is going to talk about. And, yeah, okay, there you go.
So this is my elevator.
And brought it from home.
Yeah. So what you're looking at here are what we'd call fixtures. On the left side of the slide, this is the primary means of a user interacting and giving instructions as far as what destination they want to go to. That's called the car operating panel, or sometimes the COP. And when you push that button for floor 1, 2, or 3, you're registering what's called a cab call. That's as opposed to when you're in the hallway, you push up or down, and that's called a hall call. There's also position indicators, both traveling with the car, to tell you what floor you're at, what direction it's going, and in the hallway to let you know, you know, you're about to get on an elevator that's going in the wrong direction. Please don't do that.
Yeah. So again, when the elevator is driving you up or down based on the instructions you've given it, that's happening from the motor room itself. The elevator machine that you're riding in, the car, doesn't have its own power. That's being provided from the pit or the penthouse. Overhead traction elevators, you've got a nice motor room all the way on the top. It's called the penthouse. Here we have beautiful, you know, gearless traction machines. Who makes these?
I believe that was Westinghouse.
Yeah, beautiful Westinghouse setup. If you have a hydro system, if you're being driven down from the pit, motor room's not nearly as sexy. Motor room and machine room, interchangeable terms, by the way. Hydro machine room, I mean, you're just, you know, you're looking at a hydro tank and a pump system and a little controller on the wall. Because space is really at a premium in so many buildings nowadays, they have made machine rooms smaller and smaller. They even do make something called like a machine roomless elevator. What is it? Well, it's a hydraulic elevator that has the pump system in the pit, also known as, why does my hoistway smell like burning hydro fluid?
So, the controller in the motor room is basically the brain of the entire system. All of the fixtures and sensors that are part of the elevator system and even the motor, of course, are tied back to this controller, which essentially is taking all of these inputs and making decisions and driving these different outputs, like the motor that actually provides the hoisting, the motor for the door that's opening and closing, pretty much everything that the elevator is doing.
This is what is controlling your direction of travel. This is what is choosing how to operate. This is what is deciding whether your call is a valid call or not, or whether you're going to bypass some security or not. And they're not all, I mean, this is kind of a newer setup. They can be pretty old, right? What are these people about to see on the next slide? This is going to trip out some of the old heads in the room.
Yeah, slide. This is a number 5 crossbar. No, I'm just kidding. This is actually an elevator controller. This is made by Otis. I believe it's a UAL controller. Basically, what you're looking at is an electromechanical decision-making machine that's just using a series of relays to decide where it wants to go and what it wants to do. And for decades, this is how all elevators are built. This is a device called the selector. What you're actually seeing is that as the elevator is moving up and down, it's actually spinning those plates and it's making contact with various little copper contacts that are telling the elevator controller where the elevator is.
Yeah, and this is not just something in a history museum. Like, there are still installs to this day that use relay logic.
This particular controller was still in use in 2014.
In where?
Manhattan. In Manhattan.
Yeah. If you've ever, like, maybe done some urban exploring, how many of you have ever been up on maybe a high level of a building and you've loudly heard, maybe through a wall, relays clacking on and off? That you're not hearing a traffic light box up there. You're hearing the elevator controller in that building. Now, some other interesting inputs that the controller gets.
So earlier you saw a selector that was spinning around mechanically and making contact. There are obviously solid-state versions of that as well. In this case, what you're seeing is there is a little silver doodad that's mounted on top of the car, and it is fixed there, and it travels up and down as the car travels up and down. Now, there's also that black tape that's behind it that runs from the top of the hoistway to the bottom of the hoistway. And on that tape, there will be magnets mounted. So there will be a solid-state magnetic sensor that's actually detecting when it's in line with those magnets. That allows it to send a message to the elevator controller saying, I'm level with the floor, or I'm approaching the floor, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. So if it ain't broke, fix it. What is the industry considering?
Of course. Now there are apparently QR code-based selector systems.
Yeah. Because the hoistway is so nice and clean, that would never get crudded up.
Exactly. So there are also more primitive forms of this that still exist on modern systems. What you're looking at here are called limit switches. These generally exist only at the top and the bottom of the hoistway in modern elevators. And if you notice that there are actually 4 of them, the bottom 2 are called slowdowns. The third one up is the normal limit, and the top one is the final limit. What happens is, as this elevator is approaching the top floor, it will trip the first slowdown, it'll trip the second slowdown, and then it'll trip the normal limit. Obviously, as you might guess, that's telling the elevator controller, hey, it's time to slow down, you're approaching the end of your run. And then finally, when you hit the normal limit, that's where you should stop for a nice, safe, level landing. So you might be wondering, well, why is there a final limit? Well,
if you shoot past that normal limit, because something goes wrong,
right.
Elevator's unhappy.
Exactly. So this, as the name implies again, it's the final switch that is there to indicate there is absolutely nowhere else for this elevator to run.
Yeah, you're going to crash in the ceiling. Jam on brakes now.
So another thing to keep in mind also is that if you ever happen to find out this happens in your building, if the elevator is on the finals, you pretty much need an elevator mechanic to come reset it.
Yeah, we witnessed one in a mall somewhere, and like even I hadn't fully learned all this yet. We're walking around, and Howard's like, "Oh, what do you think happened here?" And he's like on his radio listening to the mall security. Like, broken elevator. I'm like, wow, that thing, it's not platformed right. It's like, it's way too high. He's like, yeah, it's sitting on its finals. They have to send out a proper tech. You'll see later in the slides who they sent out. It was not a proper tech. But this is all part of the elevator safety system. I mean, in general, we love allaying fears. A lot of people, you know, just, there's this, oh man, I don't know about elevators. Are they kind of dodgy? I'm scared. You should never really be afraid in an elevator. I mean, I guess if you're super claustrophobic, yes, it's a small box. But mechanically, elevators are really safe machines, due mostly to pioneering advances here in America. Go, you know, America. Our engineers and all of our systems, we've evolved the elevator industry a lot, and safety mechanisms work really robustly and reliably. Your classic governor setup, you have a Hollister Whitney governor here on the left. The idea of a separate set of ropes that are traveling with the car at all times, just monitoring the speed, monitoring how it's going, and they will engage braking systems if the elevator is traveling incorrectly. The Hollister Whitney governor that you're seeing there can fire and trip and actually jam itself locked if the elevator starts speeding down. It can trip electrically. It even has a mechanical flyball type system where the centrifugal force, boom, it'll jam mechanically. What do those roping systems do? You'll see in the next slide. And there's another governor you can talk about also, HW on the side, right?
Yeah, the device on the right is a newer form of safety. The governor prevents a free fall. Most people have a fear that the elevator is just going to drop, right? But actually, the fear should be that the elevator falls up, because what's happening is typically the counterweight that the elevator is attached to weighs more than the cab and its occupants. So if, for some reason, all hell broke loose and the elevator was moving uncontrollably, chances are it was going to move up, not down. And actually, there was a case in Chile, I think it was.
Yeah.
There was
like
a viral video
on YouTube
where the elevator just rushes up out of control and it crashes into the overhead. That's exactly what happened. So the device on the right is called a rope gripper, and it's intended to prevent that.
Yeah. So elevator safety systems have been growing and evolving ever since Elijah Graves' Otis created the first rail gripper mechanism. And you're seeing this demonstrated here in this non-American, very British TV show, which you can tell not just because of the gentleman's teeth, but because of the fact that he is being raised up a not insubstantial amount on this elevator, and then they just kind of saunter over a workman to chop the line. But because of the positive force on the rail gripper, you're going to see the same demo that Elijah Otis used to do at various fairs. And they say, all right, this is going to work the right way, isn't it? Okay, I hope so. But sure enough, ka-clunk, click, and then you just don't fall. And that's what Elijah Graves Otis would do, and he would famously shout down to the crowd, all safe, fellas, you know. And this kind of idea, the idea of positive lock mechanisms, interlocks to prevent free fall, are how most elevators are built. We talked about the governor roping system. This is a side view of a hoistway. You can see the rail and the roller on the side. This roping setup, that's the governor rope. And again, we already told you they're not ropes. They're not running on like hemp fiber. These are cables.
They used to,
yeah. Hemp is strong, man. You've had the wool pulled over your eyes. So, yeah, this is the governor roping setup. And imagine that's traveling with the car. You can see the little swaging tool that's locked up there. Now, if the governor trips and jams shut, that rope will yank and actually pull on the safety mechanism. And they're all different styles of safety mechanism, but they're all doing the same thing. They're firing, they're jamming, you have wind-up safeties. There's a number of them, but their whole deal is stop this car from plummeting. And if all else fails, you should still understand that there are additional mechanisms down in the pit. Whether you're talking about hydros or overheads, these are all pictures of pit buffers. And if you've ever seen, because maybe you were exploring somewhere you shouldn't, the pit of an elevator system, you may have seen the spring buffer or the oil buffers down there. Some people just assume, they're like, oh, so when like the elevator is done its travel, it's probably sitting on that, waiting at the bottom of the hoistway. No. The elevator's never supposed to touch this, except during, you know, special tests that he can run. This is there just to absorb the full weight of the elevator at full rated travel speed. And they're completely going to survive that. You're going to see maybe some footage of that later, too.
If you're in an elevator when that happens, you may be grievously injured, but you probably won't die.
Yeah. Elevators want to keep you alive, and elevators do their job really well. If an elevator's running on automatic mode, you're going to be okay, right?
Generally speaking.
Yeah. What's the one type of thing you should not do when the elevator's on automatic mode?
Mess with it in general.
You shouldn't ride the car top. Yeah.
I've done it before.
This is actual surveillance footage.
This is it.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
Genuine documentary footage.
Come on. Turn that light on. Oh, this is brilliant. I can't believe it.
And again, they're not in control of the television. They're just riding it, but someone else is driving it on the map. Yeah, like, don't be that guy.
In all seriousness, this has happened. It's not just TV drama. There are actual cases where people working on the car tops have been fatally injured that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys, you're smart, right? You understand this is fun stuff. It can be dangerous. Don't be like derp faces, right? So we talked about automatic mode is very safe. Who is interested in finding out stuff that's not automatic mode?
I think we have some people in the audience that would like to see that.
So there's a lot of other special modes. Many of them apply to the work that I do. Independent service mode. Far and away, one of the most useful things you can do with an elevator if you want to run it in a way that's not perhaps the standard. Independent service mode is something that will take the elevator out of the bank of normal operation. It is your elevator for as long as you're in the cab. If I flip an elevator to independent service mode, and let's say I'm in a data center and I can't get up to like floors 8, 9, and 10 because I don't have a badge or whatever reason, independent service mode gets me up to that floor usually. Yes. Let's say, however, that I'm not trying to get to any, like all the floors are accessible, I just don't want to be found by security. So as Babak and I can tell you stories, there's been plenty of times we've just like hid in disused offices, I've hid in a janitor's closet. The nicest place I've ever hid was in a fucking elevator. Because if you flip independent service mode, not only do you drive it wherever you want, but it ignores all the hall calls. So if you're in a big building with like 10 elevators, no one's going to notice, hey, how come elevator 7 hasn't been responding all day? No, they're just getting on whatever one shows up. I sat in an elevator for 4 hours with a nice little outlet and light, and I could plug my phone in and just hang out till the office workday was done. Then I drove it back down to the lobby and let him in. Yeah, like... So sometimes those are key switch operated, sometimes those are toggle switch operated. There's a lot of things we'll tell you about little hidden panels. But independent mode far and away is what most people go for right away when they're trying to do funny things. That's not at all the only mode, right?
Now, independent...
Check.
Sure. So independent mode should not be confused with attendant mode. Attendant operation is very similar to independent, but they are in fact different. It harkens back to the days when there was actually a dude, or a woman, in the elevator that would run the cab and pick up passengers and manually control the elevator. And what they would actually have is usually a crank like this in a really old elevator, but in a more contemporary elevator you might see something like this. So what this actually is, it's behind a lock panel. If the attendant has the key, they put it on attendant service, and these controls allow the attendant to make decisions about how to proceed picking up the calls. So for example, if it's the Hotel Penn and there was an attendant and a ton of people get on at one floor with a bunch of bags and the elevator is full, they might say, you know, we should reverse direction and just bring these people down to the lobby because it's full. There's no one else who's going to get in here, right? Or maybe there's a VIP or an emergency or something like that. So the up and down buttons allow the attendant to say, it's time to reverse direction. The bypass button, sometimes the nonstop button, what that actually does is allows the attendant to make the decision to skip the hall calls. It doesn't clear the hall calls. It doesn't ignore them. It just temporarily skips them for until the duration of this particular ride is over. And then it'll continue to collect those calls as it resumes normal operation.
Yeah, but it's expensive to have an attendant. It's expensive to, like, hire an attendant. And if you have various priority needs for your elevators, what if you want – here, you can use them. What if you want – to not have an attendant standing in the elevator anymore, but you still want to, let's say, prioritize some big shot or bigwig. Well, tell them a little bit about executive mode.
Sure. So executive and express priority service as the name implies, are various priority modes that allow an authorized person to register a call that the elevator controller will give priority to over normal plebeians. Basically, what it does is if a person has a key, they might have a special key switch at the hall station where they'd register an up or down call. And when they insert the key and turn it, it tells the elevator controller, this person here is more important than any other call that you have. Service it as fast as possible. The basic difference between express service and executive service is that one will reverse direction of the cab and dump people out. The other one will just continue in the same direction.
Now, he says dump people out. He needs that.
Yeah. Otis in particular has a voice announce system that will actually say, this car is needed for some other purpose. Please exit at the next floor.
Yeah. So, yeah, you are not important. You can leave. How about one? This is one that some people might find obscure, but there's actually a lot of elevators in the greater New York region that run on Sabbath mode. If you haven't actually been in one, you might have seen, like, Religious, where they talk about the Shabbat elevator, the Sabbath elevator. If you're not familiar with certain Orthodox religious practices where people aren't allowed to interact with any buttons or switches, this is a mode that was created, kind of just made up by elevator controllers and elevator programmers. And they said, well, maybe we can give some people the ability to not, you know, walk all the way up the stairs. Tell them what actually happens on the Sabbath in some of these elevators.
In most cases, the elevator will go to the lowest landing, pick up its passengers, presumably it's the lobby. It will then proceed to the top floor.
All the way up.
And then stop at every single floor on the way down without any interaction from the user.
Yeah, giving you the opportunity to get off on your floor. And in a really high building, sometimes they'll skip, you know, every other floor. But that's the idea. That's the idea that, oh my gosh, I don't have to push any buttons. I can still get where I'm going. It's an interesting kind of end run around the man upstairs. Let's talk about a feature that is not also very common, but damn, it should be, and you would be wishing for it maybe if you were at a conference like this one. He said ventilation is what Marpat said. Yeah.
Ask us later about the air conditioners for elevators.
Yeah. Or even just the story. You'll tell stories in the Q&A about the fan during inspection.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But no, what we're talking about is load bypass. Oh, my freaking God. Elevators have load sensors. If you've ever been in an elevator that was, like, angry, it was beeping at you, oh, my God, this car is overweight, how many people have ever had that happen? Because you're all fat hackers like me, right? Yeah. No, I mean, elevators, they know how, if they're too heavy, they can program additional features in so the elevator can say, I've picked up a few, you know, call calls here, I've platformed, I am at capacity. It is stupid if I keep stopping on every floor on the way down, opening my doors with people just staring at a full car, and it'll just prioritize straight down. Why the hell this is not enabled more often boggles my mind. If you're a building owner, hire an elevator service tech who can optimize your shit, and this will get people moving around the building faster.
I think it comes down to money.
You can also enable this while you're at it. Anti-nuisance mode, or no passenger detection. If somebody presses too many buttons in rapid succession, or if an elevator platforms at a number of floors answering calls that have been put in, and the safety edge detects nobody getting on or off, elevators can be programmed to say, well, somebody was being a jackwagon, and I should just dump all these calls and like get the hell where I was going. We accidentally
found, I guess, this was a Shaka Khan.
We were kind of drunk.
Right,
and we go, oh, wow, look at that. Done. That's kind of funny. And we just kept slamming buttons, seeing how many we could press. And you'll notice, if you press buttons too quickly, they'll start to decide just to dump out all the calls. That's anti-nuisance.
It's like they know we're here.
But most of all, I mean, most optimization or extra, you know, efficiency, it mostly all you're seeing is people talking about peak performance. Occasionally, especially in office buildings and hotels, you'll have peak demand. And they know what times of day people are trying to get up or trying to get down.
Right, so at a hotel environment, obviously more people are going to be checking in the evening and checking out in the morning. And in an office environment, they'll be arriving in the morning and leaving in the evening. So in terms of optimization, if you were to hire somebody like me to come and try and optimize your elevators, what we would generally do is model your building in highly sophisticated software. Now, you think I'm kidding, but actually it turns out that Maxis did not really design this from the ground up. They actually found some guy in Japan that was working on a serious building simulator to model elevators. And that was the evolution of Sim Tower.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, it's actually frighteningly accurate. If you want to talk about Sim Tower, I'd love to.
Yeah, you can like, what did you tell me about the motor room in Sim Tower?
Oh, yeah, if you double-click the motor room, it gives you all kinds of programming options for the elevator. You can program it for different times of day and peak operation and all kinds of things.
Yeah. Something that doesn't apply here as much as maybe our folk who are out in the West Coast.
Sure, well, actually, it does apply here, believe it or not.
It can. Yeah. We're in what, region 1 here?
Zone 2.
Zone 2.
So basically, by code, elevators will be grouped into 3 different seismic categories depending on where they're located. So there's, for example, seismically stable regions, and then there's Southern California. So when you're in a seismically active region, because the elevator is obviously, you know, a moving object and Newtonian motion and all that fun stuff, if the building starts to sway, right, equal and opposite reaction, the elevator is going to start to move too. If the elevator is moving a little bit too much, there will be sensors. Sometimes it's just a little ring on a string that's traveling up and down, and if the ring makes contact with the string, it completes a circuit. Things like that. And if that happens, it tells the elevator controller, all hell is breaking loose. You better get these people off this elevator immediately. Now, what's interesting about seismic mode is that unlike some of the other emergency modes we're going to talk about in a second, seismic mode can actually move you up. So most people would think, well, why would an elevator bring me up in a building when an earthquake is happening? And the reason is actually that because the counterweight is also part of this mechanical system, the idea is to move the cab away from the counterweight whenever possible, so that if, for whatever reason, if the counterweight would manage to break free from the rails, you don't have this, you know, massive 2,500-pound weight swinging around
the hoist,
you know, slamming into the car.
Yeah. But perhaps, when he told me about that, I was blown away. I was like, oh, my God, that's like the craziest piece. That's amazing, you know, tech mode. That's got to be one of the wildest things. Imagine hell breaking loose like that.
Well,
there's another hell breaking loose, right?
Sure. Instead of seismic unrest, there's also civic unrest, right? So, riot mode, in a nutshell, is designed to allow building owners, who of course own the means of production, to keep the proletariats from ransacking their fortresses of solitude in an event of civic unrest. So let's just say, let the rowdy Occupy movement was outside throwing bricks through windows and whatnot. What this mode does is basically locks out the lobby or other designated floors that might have access from the ground level. The idea being that the occupants of the building can actually still travel around inside the building undisturbed.
Yeah, just like swirling their brandy, being nose in the air. Be like, I heard the ruffians are very a-twitter out there. Now, you may have probably never experienced riot mode. You may have seen or experienced, even depending on how your health has been, code blue mode. Has anybody ever seen, you know, medical service, medical emergency service in a building? Maybe you work in a hospital or something. Medical emergency or code blue mode, it's very similar to that VIP priority service. The idea being, if you are a doctor or someone in care with someone who has a life-threatening condition, you can seize one elevator out of the bank. The controller will prioritize immediately, even more so than with a VIP. It'll prioritize the absolute closest car, flip direction if necessary, make that announcement that says, this car is needed, you're not important, please get out. And then a doctor will wheel that gurney in and, you know, get someone up to obstetrics or get someone to the ICU or what have you. Another thing about hospitals and other medical modes, there's code blue. There's also code pink. Does anybody not that code pink? Does anybody want to guess? Is my color shifted way off? I don't know. That should be very pink.
Somebody already guessed it.
Yes. Now, code pink is baby theft mode. If you're not familiar with the security related to maternity wards in hospitals, the security of actually like the little baby LoJack, you know? They have all these interesting response procedures that happen in a building when a baby is moved in an unauthorized way. And some of those involve automatic door locks, some of those emergency alerts that go out over the PA. The elevators in a lot of big hospitals are part of the security operation. The elevators will behave in what is known as security recall mode. Security recall mode, which doesn't exclusively exist in hospitals, you can have big buildings that can manually trigger it if necessary. Security recall basically turns the elevator into a man trap. You can forcibly take control away from whoever's in the cab and deliver that passenger and any other occupants to a floor of your designation, the designated security recall floor, usually right by the desk, and then optionally either keep the doors shut and not let the person get out under any means, or forcibly cycle the doors, giving them no place to hide themselves while a bunch of people are standing there with guns saying, get out of my building, what are you doing here? So that's security recall mode. Not to be confused with security service, which is a catch-all term. A lot of times you'll see key switches that don't seem to make a lot of, oh, what is this? Security, priority, whatever. Like this one, I was walking around a hotel, and I said, okay, well, what do you see about these three key switches? We've got our light and fan, our inspection service, and we've got security service. And I showed this to some tool people last night, and one of them said, well, one of them is keyed very differently, right? The keyway is different. And I said, you think it's different. It's actually all the same keyway. One of them has just been beat to hell. So I walk by the front desk, and I'm like, hey, you know, you seem pretty cool. I've been rapping with you every time I walk by. You're a nice guy. Just tell me, like, I do a lot of work with elevators. What's up with the security service that you apparently are using 20 times a day? Like, are you having security incidents all the time? And he's like, no, the maids use that to go to the basement. Like, you know, we just turn that on and disable the lockouts. So just because you think you see something you understand, it might not be doing what you expect it to do. And what a lot of people don't know what they expect it to do is the big one, fire service.
So in the lobby of pretty much every building built in the 1980s and later, you're going to see a key switch just like this at the lobby or some other designated landing. In super tall buildings, they'll have sky lobbies that'll have their own switches in those lobbies. And what this basically is, it allows a firefighter to manually put an elevator on fire recall mode. So you've probably seen signs near the elevator that say, do not use elevator in the event of a fire, use the stairs, right? And no one accompany children, something like that here?
Yeah, apparently that's the rule here.
So
with your elevators.
The point being, though, that elevators do have ways of detecting when the building is on fire, sort of. The landings, the area immediately around where the elevators open up, will have a smoke and a heat detector usually. That will be tied back through the alarm system into the elevator, usually by use of dry contacts. What will happen is, if there's a fire or smoke condition that's in front of one of these landings, the elevator controller knows that there's an emergency, and it takes the elevators out of automatic operation and brings them down to that designated landing where those key switches are. The point being that passengers should not be allowed to operate the elevator when a fire is happening. There's tons of cases of this where somebody ends up in an elevator during a fire situation and the doors open to a floor that's on fire, and it's obviously not a pleasant end. So
that's fire service mode one.
Phase one is what we'd call it. So the thing is, if the fire is not at the landing, the elevator might not be in phase one by the time the firefighters get there. So they have the key that they can insert into that key switch and turn it to on. When they turn it to on, it'll manually bring all the elevators down to that.
Forces phase one.
Right. Exactly. It'll bring all the elevators in that bank down to the floor, lock them out, clear all the hall calls, passengers can't ride it, passengers can't call it, et cetera, et cetera. The difference between these two key switches is that one is at the landing, that's the one on the left, and one is in the cab, that's the one on the right. The one on the right is what's called phase two operation. This allows the firefighter to then go inside the cab, flip that key switch, and although the elevator thinks the building's on fire, it'll still run and allow the firefighter to do what they need to do.
It's saying someone authorized is in this one particular cab who knows what they're doing, surely is a firefighter, not at all a pen tester, and I should take all the calls this person is giving me, and I should take all the instruction that I should be told to do. Now, if you are not trained in fire service mode, the elevator is not behaving the way you think it will behave. You will possibly get yourself stuck in the elevator. You'll possibly not drive it the way you think you can. Please don't screw around with this, even though we've done it a lot.
So as far as the operation of fire mode, phase two, versus automatic operation, one thing to keep in mind is that because it's an urgent emergency situation, usually when there's a fire, firefighters essentially are allowed to override all the security that's inside these systems. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. But you might be thinking, okay, so you're disabling all these systems.
Yeah.
What could possibly ever override fire service?
Who could be more important in the elevator world than a fire person? Elevator inspector.
So it's not like some sinister thing where we just are all egomaniacs. But the idea is actually, yeah, it is. The idea is that if there is somebody that's on the car top, hopefully they are properly trained, and if there was an emergency situation, when they find that out, they will want to be the first ones out, I assure you. So the idea being that generally they're trained, they know how to react to the situation, and they will want to get the hell out of there.
Yeah, if you're running hoistway inspection mode, if you're operating in the hoistway, you know it's the most dangerous place to be.
To clarify again, it's because the hoistway is an extremely dangerous place. It's not going to just automatically move the cab when someone's up there working.
Yeah. And what you might find out later, and we're not going to answer too many questions about, there's a whole bunch of auxiliary controls that you can drive and run the car from in the hoistway outside of the car itself. We're not going to tell them about that, though.
No.
What you need to realize is that this is an industry where if you're not from the industry, again, we keep kind of hitting this, you might not think something is working the way it's working. This was my favorite story when he started teaching me about all the different switching mechanisms. And I was like, oh, look at that, a shutdown switch. That's kind of funny. I guess, like, you could take them out of service for, I don't know why, like, you got to save power because you're a greener building initiative. But, you know, what if there's a switch that says shut down and on, which position has the elevator shut down and which one has it running? Break it down for him.
Yeah, so in this case, to shut down the elevator, you turn shut down to on.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're not from this industry, like, ask us questions about why things aren't working the way they're supposed to work. Let's talk about some things that should work certain ways and then don't. Who would like to understand more about elevator security? And then we're going to piss all over it. Simple elevator security, things like denying users the ability to make hall calls, right? So there are a couple of different ways of doing that. Talk to them about that.
Sure. So what you're seeing on the left is a newer cutout, as it's called. What it basically is just a key switch that's wired in series, usually, that allows somebody with a key to complete the circuit by turning the key and then pushing the button. You're seeing the same thing on the right. It's just an older setup. Again, basically, it's generally very straightforward. It's usually just a simple key switch that's completing a circuit. Nothing really too complicated going on in there. Occasionally, you'll see serialization on, like, really super large jobs, but it's definitely the exception to the rule.
But, yeah, the idea of, has anyone ever been in a building where you couldn't register a call the normal way? Like, maybe I found this button, and I was like, oh, it must be an elevator, you know, push button. No, it's a light. The only way to register and latch a call was to use my room key. And then that made the call. But, of course, what is right below that light? Fire service mode. Yeah. That's very common, though, the idea of denying people the ability to make hall calls. Denying people the ability to make floor calls from the elevator with cutout locks, right?
Sure, absolutely. It's exactly analogous to locking out people from making hall calls. The idea being that inside the cab, there's a key switch that interacts with the button to prevent somebody from using it.
Now,
this is not actually wired in series the way that something in the hall
might be. A lot of people think it just breaks the circuit.
No. We'll get into that.
This is another cutout key. It might be a different key than the ones you saw, those little wafer locks. Does anyone tell me what kind of lock this is? Yeah, Medico. That floor 7 is way more interesting than the floors apparently in the other photograph there. Here's another instance of a Medico lock, right?
Yes.
But now something's different here, right?
Right. So in this case, there's no button, right? It's just the key switch. Not a good idea.
So why would that be not a good idea? What's different about this? You know, they both have Medico locks. Why would one not be code compliant? Shout it out if you think you got an idea. Yeah, they got it.
Good audience.
Who cannot fuck around with a billion keys when they're trying to operate the elevator? Fire personnel. They need every floor to have a button that they can register a call to and not screw around with individual key switches.
So.
Yeah, so all of this that you're about to see, these are all different ways that people try to secure an elevator. It's not really going to work. We're about to break it all down for you. Honestly, like...
I've seen one that worked.
Yeah, you found one interesting locking setup, where I, you know, here's a picture of a hall call button, and there's a big lock next to it. It's not locking the hall call. This is not a hall call cutout. No.
So, as you might guess, this is from a detention facility. Now, this is actually also not code compliant, although they were able to get a variance to be able to do this, although it probably wasn't the greatest idea, because somebody actually did end up getting injured as a result of that. So, with that being said, if you're trying to secure your elevator, this would be a great way to do it if you could. But I'm just going to go ahead and recommend vestibules and other forms of control around the elevator, because as you're going to see from the next couple slides, there are a lot of different means.
Yeah, if you're not physically securing the elevator area, you might as well think of your elevator as an open stairwell. Everything that you just saw, all of those different security practices, let's take a giant dump on them. How about that? So, how about when there were no hall call buttons? How are you going to get the elevator to show up? Oh, no, I have no hall call buttons. But I do have a piece of paper. Click. What just happened there? Let's just try that again for a second. Oh, there's no hall call buttons. Click. I'm going to get to class on time. You could probably figure out what happened. The elevator was platformed at that that lower level. That was its recall level. So somebody just tripped the safety edge. They just stuck something in that broke the IR beam, and the elevator said, oh, I got to bounce my doors open here. Somebody's trying to get in.
That is not a universal trick. It just happened to work on that one elevator. But yeah, something to keep in mind. A lot of these tricks are like that.
No, it's totally smart to stick things through hoistway doors when you don't know what's beyond there, right?
Totally said it, not me.
What most of what we're about to show you, though, I mean, that's just fun and hokey, but key switches. Key switches, key switches, key switches. Understanding the mechanical switching systems and understanding how to exploit them, how to get the right keys. This is what most of us do on a daily basis when we're trying to exploit elevator security. So there's a lot of different key switches, and there's a lot of different fixtures and brands that Howard's going to tell you about. And on jobs, an elevator tech will usually, you know, all right, I've got to open this key box and get the keys for that job. Or you go to the building manager and say, oh, we're here to do your inspection. All right, give me the keys. In the industry, very few people really collect these keys or monitor these keys. They say, oh, this was the key for this job, and then they hand it back. Now, if you've explored around, you might find, like, keys laying around and be like, oh, I got a tick. I'm going to write this down, or I'm going to use this key. That's something that, like, urban explorers might do. What Howard's been doing for the past years and years and years in this industry is not just, like, finding and writing down keys, but logging systematically every single key he's ever found and every single key switch where it has worked. As far as I know, he's the only gentleman that's been maintaining a database of keys and a collection of keys with full knowledge of where to use them. Now, this was Howard's keys when I first met him. Would you like to see Howard's keys today? There's more of them.
It's actually even bigger now.
And kind I think of puts I, into perspective those sets you can buy online.
Yeah, I think I left one or two at home, too.
So, yeah, talk to him about why you need this many and what you're seeing on jobs.
The basic reason that there are so many different keys is because there are so many different manufacturers of elevator fixtures. I'm not going to get into all the details of this because I don't want to waste too much time on the differences between the fixtures, but what it really boils down to is that if you are attentive to what you're actually seeing, you'll start to notice patterns. So if you could go back one,
sure.
This is something you can recognize very easily usually. This is the Otis chiclet, or the Series 1 fixtures. We call them chiclets because they look like little square chiclets, and they're very recognizable in that way. They're almost always keyed alike. So if you happen to notice that the elevator is using those fixtures, you also pretty much know what key it's using. And that applies not just to that particular line of Otis fixtures, but to newer Otis fixtures as well. There's a company called GAL Manufacturing in the Bronx. They are also generally keyed alike. Innovation Industries, another huge manufacturer of generic fixtures. Again,
yeah, these aren't elevator brands. These are resellers of aftermarket parts.
Aftermarket parts, yeah.
And they're all keyed alike.
And again, I mean, we can do this all day. Adams is another provider of parts. They key them alike.
I do this to him all the time. I send him photos from jobs, and I'm like, I'm in this building. I need to know what key this is. I've really got to get up there. He's like, come on. It's a square button. It's not recessed. You know this. I'm like, no, I don't. Tell me what the hell this is. He's like, Schindler. I'm like, okay, fine. Security's coming. I got to get out of here. What's your answer invariably is always like, sometimes he'll text me before like he's like, the email hasn't loaded yet. I'm on my phone. It's probably EPCO. Because everything's EPCO.
Yeah, EPCO is definitely a very popular one.
Now, when you see, like, when he rags on me all the time, right? Because he's like, you know this. What's the font? What is it? I'm like, I don't know, dude. Come on, tell me. But, like, if you actually compare, you might think, well, I mean, they're just round and they have a button and blah. But, like, look at them side by side. If you get into this, you'll start to learn how to distinguish. You'll start to learn various characteristics, and you can kind of, like, train spot them just like he does. We'll give you one that's really easy. How many people have seen buttons like this before? You've been probably in, like, a low-rise, a slow high hydraulic elevator, like a Holiday Inn or something like that, right? This is your classic low-rise elevator system by Dover.
Yeah, Dover had this market cornered in, like, low-rise hydraulic elevators for the longest time. Dover ended up getting purchased by a company called ThyssenKrupp. ThyssenKrupp now makes their own fixtures, but for a while they were still installing Dover fixtures.
But then this is great. Just right. Like talk through this one.
Okay. So this is something
we just have to show you this for a second.
This is something I saw once on vacation, actually. Obviously, it's a Dover elevator, right? Because it says Dover. And just take my word for it, that's a Dover position indicator. It's just another one of the many fixtures that if you start to recognize them after a while, you'll know who made it and where it originated and, again, how it's wired and all the fun stuff about how it works. But this is where it starts to break down. This is not a button. This is the firefighter's jewel. This indicates to a firefighter when the building is on fire and it's on the elevator's on phase one
not
and two.
Not the stock one, though.
But it's weird because it certainly looks like a button from a distance. And if I had to guess, if you were paying attention to the other slide, it looks like an Adams Survivor Plus fixture. It's just weird. It doesn't really seem to jive with the rest of the panel. And this is also pretty weird. This is actually a ThyssenKrupp key switch on a Dover, again, on a Dover panel, but it's a Dover-compatible ThyssenKrupp key switch. Stop me if this is getting weird. But they're making parts that obviously fit the systems that they used to make. It's just a newer model of it. Now, again, they've got Adams fixtures for the push buttons for most of these floors, except apparently not for 4 or M. For some reason, they didn't need to make those vandal resistant. And then they have EPCO Designer Line, I believe it's called, is the push bar right there that's custom engraved. But this is the one that drives me really nuts. The door open button has no light. The door close button has a light. So just to, I guess, let you know that it's ignoring you when you push door close.
Yeah. All that shit on the internet, by the way, about the door close button hack, how many people know that's bullshit? How many people are convinced it's not and they swear it worked when they tried it? All right, good. Very good skeptics in the room.
How many people know that there is a sort of truth to it, but most people misunderstand it? All right.
What is your theory for why people probably started that rumor?
There's two things. The first is that on independent service, you have to hold the closed door button to close the door. That's how the elevator knows when to close the door. Somebody's running it, and it says, okay, I'm ready to close the door. They hit the closed door button, the door's closed. So I think somebody somewhere probably saw somebody running a car in independent, and they said,
stop or something.
Yeah. And basically they said, well, he hit door close, and the floor we were going to, and it went right there. Which is pretty much independent service in a nutshell.
Right, no, but you weren't witnessing a hack. You were witnessing someone who had a key.
But there's also, though, another thing. The sort of half-truth to the elevator hack with the door close button is that on older relay logic controllers, because there was such a limited amount of different states that the elevator could really exist in logically, there could be weird sort of unexpected consequences of doing things like holding the door close button for the duration of your ride. There is at least one model of Otis controller, Relay Logic, that if you are holding the door close button, it will still try to collect every call on the way up or the way down.
It'll still stop.
It'll stop, it'll level, and it'll wait as though the doors were opening and closing. But if you're holding door closed, the doors simply stay closed.
So you're just kind of being a dick. You're not being faster. But this is the kind of stuff, if you get into, you know, fixtures and identifying, you'll notice. Like, how many people ever used to build computers and swap out parts? And you could spot, be like, oh, when did you put a new CD drive in your computer? The beige isn't quite the same color, you know? These two hall call buttons, most people wouldn't even notice, except an elevator guy instantly walks by and goes, oh, wow, they clearly swapped out this one.
I'm super OCD, and this drove me nuts when I saw it. The one on the bottom is Helvetica. The one on top is a font called Gordon. There's a whole history to it.
But talk to this guy and buy him drinks. He'll talk about this all night.
The point being, though, actually, what happened here is this was in an office building where there happened to be more down demand from this floor than up demand. So at some point, the arrow broke. The one on top, I can just tell, is the original one. Somebody broke it eventually, and the mechanic that came out was like, well, I need another push button, right? So they probably called up EPCO, and they said, hey, I need a down button. And they're like, well, which kind?
And people in the industry aren't all like him. They don't care.
And he was probably like, well, down.
So you get EPCO. But let's talk about something you should care about, and the industry should really care about more. And we're really shocked at how many people in this industry, or pseudo in this industry, are selling keys, and they're like bullshit sets of keys.
Sure. So, like I was saying, a lot of elevators are keyed alike, and there are some vendors that have taken advantage of this to various ends. It's primarily marketed towards firefighters and fire departments who have a need to have the keys on hand. So sometimes, even though there should be a Knox box or a key box somewhere in the building, or a building manager should have the keys, sometimes that's not always the case. And in an emergency, there's no time to waste. The firefighters want their own sets of keys, right?
Yeah. So this set's popular. This is a $70 set. Get you 8 keys. Those doing the math, that's like a little under $9 a key. Does it come free with the smoke, though, right?
Yeah. The smoke is included in the package. Yeah. It ships to UPS Ground.
There's another set that people sell for $200, 17 keys, a little bit more per key. But of course, you know, you're getting more options, right? This is a firefighter would really want this set because it's got so many options for them, right?
Right. Well, what I like about this one is that the vendor very, very courteously decided to take nice, straight-on photos of the keys.
Yeah. So if you were in Yos Vegas's talk, exactly. And Howard was able to look at those and instantly identify most of them, and he realizes what a useful set this is.
This set is probably one of the best values in the industry for fire departments. As long as your particular fire department serves a geographic area, including Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Hampshire, New York, South Carolina, and Arizona.
Yeah, so if that's where your truck is rolling through the streets all the time, all together somehow, I guess this is the set for you. Go ahead and drop the 200.
Realistically, what probably happened was somebody just kept handing the vendor keys and saying, you know, I've seen this work for fire service on an elevator. And then they say, well,
yeah, add it to the ring. Now, the thing about that, when people are not really discriminating what they're putting on these key sets, and they're not even very sharp on how they're duplicating these keys, you'll get situations like this from some suppliers, where clearly one was a nice original machine code cut key and the other was just run on a duplicator and maybe a duplicate of a duplicate. So in the industry, thankfully, as we have learned, the key switches, they have a lot of them have really bad tolerances. So all these keys will kind of work. But if you are interested in getting proper keys, keys that are made well, keys that are not just super sloppy, that's the difference between, you know, buying them from, let's say, elevatorkeys.com versus just going on eBay and saying, oh, I need the 2839 key.
Yeah, and I can actually just tell you, definitely don't bother trying to order from that website. They will ID you and put you through endless verification processes.
Yeah. But we'll talk about something now that some people might say, well, I've seen these systems where, forget key switches, they're not even buttons. I've seen destination dispatch, it's called. How many have ever ridden an elevator like this? All right, so there's some around here, new modern idea. The idea being for super efficiency, you shouldn't tell passengers to select their floors. You should tell them to dictate, I want to go to 17, and it will tell you, oh, go to elevator A, go to elevator E. And the elevators will optimize those calls and collect them up. Well, in a destination dispatch system, if there's no control in the elevator, how does any of this work? What does every elevator have to have in its configuration package for emergencies? Fire mode. What's a fire person going to do? They're not going to bang on like a touch screen with giant gloves. No, there's almost always a hidden panel that you can key open with the fire keys in a destination dispatch elevator, and it will have the full bank of buttons. And as you learned, you don't even have to be on fire mode. Those are regular ball call buttons at that point.
Yeah, this is a kind of weird situation. When the panel was opened, it was demonstrated to me that even though the elevator was not actually on firefighter's operation, pushing that button, once you had the lock panel open, allowed it to sort of operate like a traditional automatic elevator.
Yeah. But this is a very modern, futuristic kind of system, right? Let's forget about the future for a minute. This is still an industry really stuck in the past in a lot of ways. So when we meet with people, right, and you know a lot about physical security from me, and I've learned elevators from you, what did someone tell you when you were looking at the new key switch they were equipping?
Yeah, this is actually from a casino, and we had the pleasure of interfacing with the building's architect, who had an incredible amount of personal involvement with selecting elevator components. And this topic of security obviously came up because it's a casino. And I remember very distinctly when he was describing to me how he picked the lock cylinders. And his exact words were, no one could ever subvert our security because we use unpickable tubular locks.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they think tubulars are the latest and greatest thing that ever came out. Somebody somewhere pushes Medico keys in some instances. I got a big collection of them through him. I laid them all out, and I said, well, that looks kind of funny. Baba, give me your screwdriver for a second. And I tightened it up on the screwdriver, and I said, well, okay, first of all, what you got here is keys that are the same bidding and same cut for half the damn blade of the key. And the rest are all just part of a mastered system. What did you learn from Yost yesterday, and what did you learn from us if you ever talk about master keying? You can decode the top master key with a large enough sample data set. Not going to say we did, but, you know, lol, we did. I got this photo from him from a restaurant one day. He's like, check it out. I'm like, wow, okay, you're on like a Dover job, right? Looks like a Dover impulse key. He's like, it is, but you won't believe where it is. So there's just a lot of key reuse. There's like people think these are unique keys, and they're getting them from a supplier, from a supplier, from a supplier. Your keys are not, yeah, Mouse is saying voting machines have this same situation. Somebody who's not building the lock, they're just ordering a part, is probably ordering a part that is not as unique as they think. Ask him downstairs or during the Q&A what NEMA 7, you know, super destructo resistant, you know, fixtures.
Explosion proof fixtures
have to do with gumball machines, and he'll tell you a story. Here's another one, just kind of the thinking, the behind-the-times thinking of the industry. This is the official instruction set from MCE, one of the elevator providers that does some Internet of Things, remote connectivity. And they very specifically say, create an Edge account and punch a hole in your firewall called MCE support. Make sure the password is MCE support. In fact, go ahead and take your admin password, change that to MCE support. Just make it all MCE support so that we can always get in. So you have, this is the latest generation of product, by the way, from MCE, the IQ and the IVU systems. This is what they are now moving to for the idea of remote management. We're just going to let this video play and see what some people might think. Is, you know, would you want your elevators with all of this functionality being connected to the internet with the same password on an XP box? Yeah, Josh wants the badges on the same system. They probably make an a module for that. Yeah.
The good news is, although this was installed in 2014, I believe they paid for the extended XP support.
Yeah. How many people were at the social engineering talk? Very, very groovy. How many people are going to laugh at this?
As your building's requirements change, you can customize your elevator's operation to fit your specific needs with a simple telephone call to our elite engineers.
Elite.
To reserve one of our elevators?
It won't be a problem. I'm going to take elevator number 2 from the bank, and I'll reserve it for your move.
You can restrict service to a floor under renovation in a hotel.
I've got it reserved.
Or place a car on independent service to use it for moving furniture or for the exclusive use of a VIP. It can all be done with a single phone call.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So you can call up and say, oh, yeah, I need elevator 10 to be on independent service. And there's supposedly, you know, a little owner card that has your credentials on it, which nobody could ever possibly bluff their way through and say, oh, no, I don't have the card in front of me, but the VIP is coming right away. You got to do this for me, man.
Yeah, I'm paying for elite service.
It's the OnStar of elevators, basically. Like, how about this one? This is great. The FEOK1. Is the most prevalent, we would say most prevalent, right, fire key?
Yeah, but actually, let me take this slide, yeah, if you don't mind. So in 2007, the elevator safety code was revised to include a standardized fire service key. The idea was to remove the need for firefighters carrying these massive key rings. They said, let's just make one key, and let's restrict it because we want to make sure this doesn't fall into the wrong hands. There's too much that could go wrong.
So it makes sense that they put in the code, you shall not have this key, it must only be limited to firefighters. It makes a little less sense
that they
put the direct bidding code in the freaking document. What? Yeah.
There's actually a funny backstory to this, too, because the 2007 and 2008 code changed. In 2008, they clarified that the key was supposed to be cut clockwise with that bidding code. Somebody said, this is a bad idea. We should improve the security by cutting it counterclockwise.
So you need two keys for FEOK1. But in general, I mean, it's all naked on the inside. We talk about all the key switches, we talk about the systems, but, you know, these are just circuits.
At the end of the day, most of the circuits are simply on or off. There's really nothing complex in there. And simply completing the circuit sends whatever desired message you're trying to send back to the controller. So if for some reason the panel is exposed to you, you essentially have root on that elevator.
Yeah. So let's say you're in a situation where there's a floor that's locked out, and you say, oh, I want to go up to the penthouse, you know, the top floor, and I can't. Well, if that elevator panel is something that you can get behind, maybe, so the basement doesn't work, top floor doesn't work, but if we kind of, flip this number and flip that number, and whoever was in the video doing this, they go, okay, well, what do we got here? Okay, so this is the independent service key switch. What's right behind it? Well, simple freaking wire contacts. So if we go ahead and take those wires off and bridge them together, the elevator thinks the independent mode switch has been flipped. Do not do this. If we didn't make it clear earlier, these are live mains back here. These are live 120-volt current.
And we'll show you something later.
Yeah, we'll show you later. But sure enough, independent mode on, go where you want to go. You just have to stand there for the entire travel of the, you know, the zone holding hot leads together. So that person was kind of a dumbass. But sure enough, yeah, duct tape, of course. That would be the way to do it. But there you go. You know, get up to the top floor, et cetera. Why? Because that swing panel was able to be popped open with no detection whatsoever and no real prevention whatsoever of that happening. Other security that you may see in, let's say, a big building like that, we couldn't get up there because we didn't have the key card. No, I mean, whoever was in that video couldn't get up there because they didn't have the key card.
I thought it was.
It was that guy who I did that thing that time. So key card systems, again, this could be an entire talk on its own. It actually already is an entire talk on its own. Watch Major Malfunction's old talks about magstripe hacking. If you want to ask us more about how the mag reader or how the card reader or the RF reader in the cab is interacting with the controller, ask us later or ask us downstairs. For the most part, you can clone them, you can get around these systems, or just tell them to turn off. I've seen elevators where there's a key switch that says card reader enable disable. Just disable it, and then the card reader doesn't care that it's there.
Would it surprise you that they're key to like also?
Yeah. So for pen testing and for getting around security, what do we do? Again, it's all about the key switches. It's all about independent service and having the right key rings. Through working with Howard, we've optimized our sets of keys through like how common they can be. So we have this key ring is really rare, leave it in the car. Then we have this key ring is pretty common, let's keep it in the Red Teamer bag. And then this key ring is really common, let's keep that in my pocket. So using independent keys, cutout keys, or sometimes fire keys, you can do fun things like, well, maybe this. Let's say you have a building, and at the front of this building is a security desk. And if you're going into the building, you're supposed to interact with that security desk. But this building also has a rear exit. There's people that can come down an elevator and exit through a rear door. That's a rear door you're not supposed to be able to get back in. Guess what? You can. But if you get to this elevator, even then, they figured, well, you know, what's anybody going to do? This elevator's not going to respond to any calls because people don't have the badge. If you take control of this elevator, then maybe drive it in fire mode somewhere else into the building and get off, you have effectively bypassed the downstairs security just by having the right keys and a little bit of know-how. You're going to see a video of that happening. We might even play it twice if you don't catch it all because it's really fast. You're going to hear Howard and I say things like phase one, phase two. What we're doing is very quickly, with our own duplicate set of keys, flipping one mode, the next mode, registering a call, and I'm jumping on the cabinet. This is us getting in the back entrance of the facility. You can see the security cam. Door is locked. Door is not locked properly. Here's the elevator. We can get it to open its doors for us, but the only way we're getting to drive it up is with keys. I'm outside, he's inside.
Ready. On. Phase one, phase two.
Call is registered. I can pull my key, join him in the car. Bobic and I have done this at various facilities before. And also, when you're doing that, you're not throwing all of the elevators into, you know, fire service panic where they all drop down.
Well, just to clarify, for at least the moment that you've put the car on phase one, it is the bank of elevators will be on phase one.
Yeah.
Now, in this case, we simply just turned it on that one car into phase two and then yanked the key from the outside, effectively turning it off immediately, you know, within seconds, you know, to not disturb people within the building, right?
Yeah. So everyone else did briefly experience that jewel flash on and off,
right.
But hopefully they, you know, didn't panic.
And if we can just do another quick disclaimer, we feel like we're trained professionals, and there is a whole story to this particular job where we filmed this. We accidentally took this elevator out of service, and it was a big deal.
Yeah, it took us like 20, 30 minutes of monkeying around. And
it was like phone calls. I don't know what I broke.
Yeah, the controller got unhappy. So again, like this is a really cool end run around security. Be aware of how that works. Be aware that you shouldn't just maybe look at the New York Post and get the keys like Yost talked about in his talk and be like, well, I'm going to get some fire keys. The New York Post said there's no way anyone could ever do that. So yeah, just because you think you can get the keys from a little low-res photo. Oh, fuck low-res photos, right? So this is a really high-res photo of the New York City fire key, the infamous 2642 key. Would you be interested to know that, A, this is an unrestricted blank, this is a standard Yale key, or as Yost found out when he was looking at the photos, it's also the same blank that Abbas uses. So he cut a nice little Abbas just looking at this.
And as he was, you know, looking and cutting and measuring, he's like, that is not right. Is this right? And I said, oh, yeah, I found out about that. Would you like to know the bidding code for this key? Would you believe that I'm not really breaking security here when I tell you that 2642 is the name of the key for years because 26420 is the fucking bidding code for the New York City fire key? So they could yell at that one guy on eBay all they want. Like, everyone has had the name and the bidding of this key forever.
Yeah, and what's really weird about it, though, it just goes to show you how slow things can change in this industry, is that that Post article ran in, like, 2008, I think.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for years before that, even, that people were selling these keys online and on eBay. And just to be clear, I'm pretty sure that NYPD treats unauthorized possession of this key as possession of burglar's tools.
Probably. So you probably shouldn't carry this. You probably also shouldn't carry the one that works in all of New Jersey, all of New Hampshire, and all of Massachusetts. That's a 3502 key, which is also an unrestricted blank, and which also has a really stupid bidding code. No, exactly. All right.
Just
so
kidding.
The tool—they're already freaking yelling at us. That's not the bidding code. That's actually the real bidding code. Yeah, get the video later, I guess. One more thing about fire service and interesting fire operations. It involves the BACnet, the Building Automation Control Network. Brad Bowers did an amazing talk about this a couple of places. It has to do with the network-enabled communication in a building where, as Howard said, if there's a fire, but it's not in, the lobby, the fire service might not trip. Well, a big building owner might want the elevators to go on a fire service if there's a fire anywhere else. There are ways of communicating between systems. Hey, there's this condition. Hey, there's that condition. The HVAC is having a problem. There's a fire sensor here. Learning how to sniff and spoof stuff on the BACnet can cause very interesting things to happen in a big building.
And actually, if I'm not mistaken, I mentioned that dry contacts and just simply completing a circuit is the primary means by which elevators will use to enable these various modes. But actually, NFPA 2012 requires that dry contacts not be used. And Brad gets into that extensively that talk, so it's worth checking out.
Yeah, check out his talk. He's an awesome guy. The last most powerful thing you can do to get around a building, and again, we're not advocating it. We're just going to, look cool while not dying and doing it. Hoistway access. As we said, who is more powerful than a fire operator? An elevator operator. Somebody driving the car from in the hoistway itself. Would you like to see what it looks like to get to a restricted floor by doing something that my mom thought was way too unsafe and got upset? Here we have a secure building. The footage on the lower right is the floor where we're all standing. The footage on the upper right is the destination we want to be. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to seize the top of the elevator by catching the cab in between floors, getting on top of that elevator where only two of the three people in this footage have any business being, and somehow they didn't kick me out and let me come along. There is, as we said, there are car top run controls, and people at, let's say, MIT have known this for years. How many people have ever heard of a late night elevator ride at MIT? Yeah, this is what's happening. This is what you're doing. You're actually taking the elevator out of operation. You're running it on inspection mode and doing whatever the hell you want. There's floor lockouts.
Okay.
Fuck you. There's badge for this elevator. Fuck you. There's a fireman who wants to use the elevator. Fuck you. I'm running it from the car top, and I can go any direction we want. We can go any direction up or down. We can go here we are, and sure enough, Howard's driving it up. We get to the next floor. What kind of security locks do you think exist inside the hoistway doors? Basically zero.
Zero.
There we are.
Actually.
And we step out.
Now, the NYFD actually allows you,
you can just use
a lock to secure your hoistway door. It just has to be the 2642 key.
So, yeah, hoistway rides, right? Now, were we using any special keys at all?
Yes.
We were using a different kind of key, though, right?
Sure. So, if you ever see that little hole in the corner of the door, that's what's called an escutcheon hole. And an elevator mechanic will use a tool like this, a drop key. And essentially, they're just reaching inside. When that metal flag drops down, they can rotate the key, lift up on the flag that's attached to the release mechanism, the door opens. There are all kinds of different keys. It's really not worth getting into the different distinctions between all of these, but every door has a key. Let's just put it that way.
and some people who weren't authorized were using these keys interesting ways, right?
Absolutely. So, New York City Housing Authority is the single largest owner of elevators in the world, according to my understanding. And they have a unique experience with unauthorized use of hoistway door keys. And as this slide might suggest, what people were doing was hiding drugs inside elevator doors. Because I guess they figured, hey, you know, who's going to look there? Well, besides an elevator mechanic, right? But they probably knew, hey, no one's taking care of these elevators anyway. So what people would do is they'd have a door key, they'd open it up, they would tape the drugs to the inside of the door where no one else could get to it, and then say, hey, I left it in that spot.
Yeah, right? In that place I put that thing that time.
So, of course, there's a solution for this, right?
So the industry came out with escutcheon hole locks. They said, all right, you've got this little hole, and you don't want people sticking things through it. We'll make you a little lock that will fit right in. It'll have this mounting collar, and then if you slip the lock through, it'll just plug up the hole. And we'll give you, you know, that nice high-security tubular key, right? So we have the tubular key, opens the lock. It's just a little rotating tailpiece, just this little tail bit interacting with the fat collar on the other side. And if you don't catch what's happening there, you can see back here, the tailpiece is clear or the tailpiece is blocking. Very simple mechanism, really neat idea, right? Now, as I said, you know, tubular locks are what? Tubular locks are awesome, right? No, tubular locks are pretty bad. Here's the nice tubular pick that Tool happens to have downstairs. Try it, try it, try it. All right, well, that's kind of turning. And now that looks pretty turned all the way. The hardest part, just getting the lock out of the hole. There we go. Now, you might think that, like, oh, man, that's terrible. I guess they should use, like, an ACE, you know, 2 or a really nice quality tubular lock or maybe something better than a tubular. Well, there's a much more fundamental problem that Howard realized as soon as he, you know, bought one of these to play with it, and he showed it to me, and I was like, no way, that can't happen this way, can it?
So if you go to the next slide, You'll see that there's a tapered edge on the side that faces the general public. So grabbing it with a tool from the outside is actually a little bit difficult.
Right.
Unless that tool...
Do you see how this installs, right? You see the collar is got two halves that screw together? So if you're outside and you have the real key, you interact with the lock plug. That's called the speedy key. If you happen to have any other tubular key ever, it won't interact with the tailpiece the right way. What it'll do with the application of a little bit of extra torque is just start unscrewing the whole mounting collar. So, yeah, this is the slower key because you got to turn it a whole bunch of times. So there's your escutcheon hole lock.
Open.
Yay. Open. But ultimately, beyond that, forget getting in the hoistway. Yeah. Hi there. Getting in the machine room, getting in the motor room is absolutely the end-all be-all for a lot of this stuff.
Right. So everybody here is probably in information security or has some kind of IT experience. So we've come up with this kind of analogy that we've explained, you know, people with keys obviously have privileges and, you know, administrators and service people within the building have escalating privileges as you go up the line. But when you're in that machine room, there's a fundamental difference between being on top of the car where you can control it without any exception. And that the only exception being that someone in the machine room could literally just disconnect the run box that you're controlling.
Yeah.
So to that extent, somebody in the machine room sort of has hypervisor access. They could actually change the parameters of the universe as the elevator controller sees it. Now, whether it's through a direct interface like you're seeing here, there are actually monitors, keyboards, and mice that are connected to modern elevators that are solid-state controlled. What you're seeing there was a group controller, so it is showing you all of the elevators in a particular bank and how they're interacting with the demand. But again, if there's just dry contacts, somebody in that motor room can do a whole heck of a lot with just a single piece of wire. And as it turns out, we do that all the time. In fact, part of our job very frequently would involve jumping out various safety circuits during testing, which we'll get into in a second.
Like, an elevator's never supposed to run if the doors are open. And ever, really in the beginning, an elevator's never supposed to run if it's on its finals. If it hits the final limit, that elevator's dead, right? What does an elevator mechanic come out and fix? He jumps out the final. He just says, no, that circuit's not actually tripped, and then drives the elevator manually. There's a lot of interesting things, and when I started looking at some of the stuff you showed me in elevator rooms, you really start seeing notes everywhere.
Yeah, so it's hard to memorize all the different places you have to connect the wires to do various different things. So there's sort of a trend in the industry to use elevator graffiti, as they like to call it. And basically you write down for the guy that's coming in behind you what contact points you're working on. When
you
do
can
various
see the governor
things.
Jumper's here, the door locks are here, the car station's here. All the interlocks, they're just listing them on this graffiti slate.
But what's interesting is whoever did this was obviously a little bit concerned that this information shouldn't be leaked to the general public because they put it on the inside of the mainline disconnect switch. You know, because who's going to open up the mainline disconnect switch, right?
Well, an elevator guy.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you're really never supposed to.
Really?
Really.
Only if you have to, like, recycle the power because
you're electrician.
But this is what people like Howard do to drive an elevator way beyond normal operation. When you do, like, a five-year test, what do you end up doing? It's a full load, full speed hit into the buffer.
Yeah,
right?
when you have a traction elevator, a cable-driven elevator, every 5 years you're going to put the capacity of the car plus a little bit extra inside, in usually lead test weights, somebody will cart them in, put it inside the cab, and at full speed you'll then allow the car at full speed you'll crash into the buffer. But you also have to test the governor. You test the safeties. So you'll actually overspeed the car and force it to trip electrically and mechanically. So think about that for a second.
Yeah.
You overspeed it once, make it trip electrically, it should stop. Then you have to bypass the electrical portion of the safety and then actually make it trip mechanically. It is a fantastic sight to see.
Yeah, the idea, you know how many people you talk to your friends about having good backups and you say, well, have you ever actually like tried to restore from your backups? Have you ever wiped your system and seen if the restore worked? And I was like, no, that would freak me out. The elevator industry does this, man. They actually run these tests. What you're about to see looks like a catastrophic accident. This is not an accident. Everything you're seeing, bypassing any number of safety mechanisms, which have all been jumped out by someone in the machine room, is crashing an elevator down into the pit buffer after 40 floors. And here we come. Someone like him manually was doing that from the machine room.
And it's actually cool because that's what you're trying to do in the situation. You want to make sure that the buffer is able to take a hit at that speed.
My connections.
You should not be doing this if you don't know what you're doing in the machine room.
This guy is a 35-year industry vet. He's explaining that he came up with a clever solution for a clutter of spaghetti wiring.
He's like, okay, I got my wires, and these wires carry what kind of current? They carry very nice heavy current. Yeah, if you don't know what you're doing, jump ring contacts, if you don't know what you're doing at all in the machine room, you probably shouldn't be in the machine room.
Right.
Close this section out with that fun story.
Sure. So we were saying before that somebody in the motor room can sort of change the parameters of the universe as it exists to the elevator controller. Now, anybody from New York City knows that when POTUS comes to town, everything shuts down, right? Like gridlock everywhere. You know, no one can do anything because, you know, the big man's in town. The point being, though, that the president never just gets on an elevator. It's not just that simple, right? In terms of actually securing it, I know that somewhere somebody's got a pretty good idea that motor rooms need to be secured because when he comes to town and he has to ride an elevator, there will be a Secret Service agent in the motor room with an elevator mechanic. I don't want to say that the mechanics kind of at gunpoint, but, you know, if he, you know,
pretty much.
Anything goes wrong with that elevator, it stops between floors or does, what's going on, they're on the radios. They're saying, get this thing moving down to the parking deck now. I don't care what you have to jump her out. Kill all those safeties. Move, 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 move.
The last verifiable elevator entrapment involving a president that I'm aware of was Lyndon B. Johnson.
That must have sounded hilarious. I can just picture his voice. Speaking of listening to people's voices and talking and stuff in elevators, we're going to hit really quick on a little freaking section for you, if you don't mind.
Sure. So,
talk about phones.
Elevators have phones, right? Two-way voice communication shall be required. That's part of the elevator safety code. The idea is that if you're in an emergency situation, you can simply hit a button. And I'm sorry, actually, I may have said voice communication shall be required. It's actually voice communication shall not be required. To clarify, the idea being that if you're unable to communicate, maybe you just don't speak English, you know. But for whatever reason, if you're not able to communicate the circumstances that there is an emergency, there's usually a pre-programmed message on those phones that when you hit the button, gets a dial tone, dials out, plays the message. Sometimes they dial 911, so don't just hit the button willy-nilly. Now, what you're seeing here is an example of a non-compliant emergency phone. Now, not only do you need hands to operate this, but
you need to be able to speak. Yeah. Now, here's the right kind of phone. It's just installed behind a panel that you need hands for, so maybe that's compliant. I don't really know. But in general, understand that these are real phone lines. The elevator has a phone line running through its traveler cable to every car. If you can get to those phone lines, either up in the machine room or maybe on the phone itself, who wouldn't want just an unsecured phone line that they could do almost whatever they want with? There's nobody in this room would ever think of things they could box on that phone line, right?
Beige block or something?
Yeah, so most of these lines are sometimes limited to local calls only, but it's not about always dialing out. It's about dialing in, where we start to get interested in some of the intelligence fields. So learning that phone line, like calling and all IDing that line, or the old 258 trick might used to work, or just, looking inside the panel, finding the phone number from there, or looking at the freaking, the sign outside of an elevator, why this is here?
Anybody's guess is as good as mine. The only thing I came up with was that there were just such a frequent amount of entrapments that the building owner said, hey, let's put up a sign. So this way, when someone's stuck, we can just call and find out what's going on.
Most of these phones, however, elevator phones are designed to automatically pick up silently and be on speaker after one ring if you call them. So if you were to call the elevator number, maybe you're just a real freaking big troll and you want to make people think they're hearing voices all the time. And you just be like, I'm the elevator, I'm watching you.
Help, help, they've turned me into an elevator.
Yeah. But the bigger problem than people being, Jackie with this kind of stuff is calling an elevator phone and not saying anything at all and listening to what's being said in the elevator. This is an actual concern, whether it's based on the phone system or even some just have intercoms up in the machine room. When big people come to town and, let's say, down in the Beltway, people who officially don't work for the phone company but kind of work for the phone company and have a lot of clearance are at the phone company monitoring certain lines, saying, why is there activity on that line? Is somebody stuck in an elevator? Tell somebody to trace whatever's going on with that line. Somebody shouldn't be calling that elevator right now. Who's listening in, et cetera. But understanding how these phone systems work, if you're interested in this stuff, you can do a lot.
Yeah. So one of the most concerning things when I started researching elevator emergency phones was that I needed to change the combination on my luggage. But it's okay, because obviously this is, security through obscurity. It's not like this information is published up. Oh. Slide. So, again, even if it wasn't published online, right, it's not like they're just putting the instruction manual in the phone, cabinet, right?
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that.
Not even Nicolas Cage can believe this.
Let's talk about some other unbelievable stuff. Let's talk about, for a minute, everything that's wrong in movies. Because Hollywood loves them some elevators, man. They're a great plot device. How many people have seen, bulletproof elevators? They got to get away and they're shooting at me, but the elevator door has that nice dimpling on the inside, right, where the bullets are striking. That's all fucking bollocks. That's
nonsense. Penetrates the outer door, but not the inner door.
Yeah. Because it slows down from the outer door. The detective is chasing a criminal down the hall. And we know why movies like elevators, right? It's that suspense. So is the door going to close on time? Is he going to get it? Oh, he's got his gun. Blam! No. If he was a half step slower, he still would have shot right through that door and mowed down anyone inside. Elevators are not bulletproof. Please don't hide from an assailant in an elevator if you're in the middle of a gun battle. Everything you've ever seen with an elevator that involves a crazy box and clipping wires and I'm going to hacksaw the box saw and the Gibson. No, what's he clipping to?
This is 3,000 miles to Graceland, and this is the scene where he's hacking the elevator in the casino. He needs to, get to some floor and not let security know he's there. So it's interesting. He clips his alligator clips onto a timing crystal right there and onto the outside of an electrolytic capacitor there on the emergency phone.
Yeah. But he's got his big 7-segment display and everything, so he's, he's rocking it out. And then he's going to cut off the emergency phone that he just clipped to, so he's good. But yeah, all of these boxes that you see, this doesn't exist. It's all Hollywood magic. The only thing that's real in that scene is that he blacked out the camera, because most elevators, have cameras nowadays. He didn't have to do that. If you're interested to know about a lot of elevator cameras,
There's way easier ways than using stickers or black paint to disable them. One of the most popular ones in the industry, the DrakaCam, you check the manual for this. The manual will show you it has a little remote control. Do you know what that remote control does? It turns the camera off if you just like, bloop, it's like a TV be gone for cameras. How about everybody's favorite elevator movie, right?
Especially mine.
Yes, Speed, of course. So there are so many interesting things right and wrong about this movie that we would just wind up sounding like these guys. Buy us a drink later or ask us in the Q&A or ask us downstairs. We, like, Howard nerded out. We were watching the rate of plummet and doing some math. And they actually, it's funny. Ask us about Speed later. Everyone, however, has probably seen this plot device at some point or another in a movie. The idea of, oh, this person, get him in the elevator, and, you know, lobby security, I got someone coming down, arrest that man. But what does someone in an elevator do when they don't want to go out the normal way? Well, they flip the stop switch on their Otis Series 1 chiclet fixtures. And then they got the secret panel, right? They got the panel in the roof, which is never locked for some reason in movies and TV, even though it's always locked in real life from the outside.
It's usually locked.
Usually, maybe. But of course, you know, I'm just going to go up and now they can't find me. Where'd he go? He's on the elevator.
They
didn't go anywhere. There's nothing else in that hoistway that you can get to. There's no ladders in the hoistway. There's no ducts that take you somewhere else to the basement where you find Marvin and get the radio to listen to the terrorists. The other thing about opening that top hatch is the safety string circuit. Elevators, as we said, have many different circuits of safety and many different ways of error conditioning. If anything goes wrong with the elevator that it thinks a door is open or an interlock is open, it'll stop the elevator completely right that moment. It'll say, whoa, something's not right. This ain't good. The top hatch is usually part of this string circuit. The door locks, etc. So you have, like, Terminator 2, right? They're running down the hall having a battle, of course, with their bulletproof elevator. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, we're safe. We got in there. We got to stop those bullets. But the T-1000 says, well, that's not going to stop me. I'm going to make my hands claw this thing open. Right at this moment, that elevator is not running. Because if the doors, the hoistway doors, part open like this, the safety string is broken, the cab is stopped. But in Hollywood land, you know, that doesn't happen. You have an epic gun battle on top of the cab, et cetera, et cetera.
They could have made this scene accurate if the T-1000 had turned his cybernetic alloy fingers, whatever, into a wire jumper, and he had completed the circuit, and they would have kept running.
Yeah, maybe that was happening out of picture. We don't know. So, like, this is also popular whenever you see... how many people love this movie, right? It's a great movie. So they got one thing right, like, elevator screw-arounds are dangerous in the hoistway. The rest of this is wrong, though. Like, other than River Phoenix almost dying... There's no such, you know, there's no pushbacks and setbacks in the elevator. There's no corridors that take you somewhere else. There's no lights on the car top, usually like that.
Well, not like that. And also, there's no door roller, there's no release rollers on the doors, so it's a fake hoistway for Hollywood, too.
Pretty much the only movie that really got anything realistic I thought about an elevator was Usual Suspects. Because who likes Usual Suspects as a movie, right? So here you're actually going to see why someone as an elevator guy could be a cool assassin. So
he's even like, dressed like an elevator guy.
Secondary career for you, like taking out Kobayashi's lawyers, right? So if someone is... Why is this realistic? Because he's on the car top. He's riding the car top. So he can do pretty much whatever he wants with that elevator. He could absolutely let it platform, let it pick up this call from the car top. McManus could go ahead and he could kill the lights. That would be totally feasible. McManus could open the top hatch and jump her out that safety string from the car top, so that's plausible. He could even, if he wanted to, drive this to where he wants to go. But instead, he says, press 20, do it now, because maybe he's smart enough to know that inspection travel is much slower than automatic mode, so he wants to go really fast up there while they slap Kobayashi around. But in general, like, I mean, we kind of dropped that in because we thought some of those stories were funny. I don't know if you think that's realistic or not, but a lot of things in movies are not true. Ask us more stories if you want to know more about that. If you want to know what really is not good in real life, however, we're going to flip it back to Howard and ways you as a building owner can stay out of legal hot water.
Does anybody recognize this screenshot? Okay. From PBS Nova, Trapped in an Elevator. Story of a guy named Nicholas White. He was trapped in an elevator for something like 48 hours. He pushed the alarm button. He pushed the phone button. Nobody came to help him. Now, there's supposed to be 24/7 monitoring for the phone. There's supposed to be an alarm bell that's within earshot of somebody in the lobby. In this case, things just broke down. For some reason, nobody was able to get his call for help, and he was stuck there for an extended amount of time. But with that being said, testing the alarm bells and testing the emergency phones is something that most building owners can actually do on their own, especially if they're providing their own internal monitoring. If your elevator emergency phone goes to the security desk especially, you should be testing it on a regular basis to make sure that it works. Because for some reason, they actually go bad pretty frequently.
Yeah. And if your first responders are showing up to an actual emergency, entrapment or otherwise, and they find that you're not following code, like...
I don't know the section of the code that deals with writing on the key switch in Sharpie for the fire service key switch, but I will research that and get back to you guys.
Yeah. A lot of times you will see local regions that think they are immune to code, that think they're beyond the law. So you'll see situations where, again, this was the transit authority where I live in Philadelphia. This is SEPTA's elevators. They don't have a proper button on the platform level. They put a key switch in. I don't know if they have a variance for that or not. I bet they don't because they just, oh, whatever, we just don't want people screwing with this. This is cheaper. Throw it in this way. If you are having a perfectly normal day and your elevators are fine, who cares, right? Whatever, you're skirting the law, I guess. You saved yourself $650. If you have a problem, if you actually have an incident, this is kind of the stuff that comes back on you. If you're a building owner or if you're the controller of this facility, they're going to say, why are you not following code? Who the hell let this slide by? And you're facing serious fines and problems. If your emergency phone is not a phone but a freaking speaker, and at least it says right on there, this is not correct phone, fuck you.
I've never heard of an emergency speaker to something else.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess you could be like, help, help, help. I hope someone's hearing me. Help. But yeah, those alarm bells... The alarm bells, which usually would go off if you press or flip a stop switch, which you normally shouldn't be able to do, because these are not always called the stop switch.
There is an interesting history to stop switches in the elevator industry. There were a number of different revisions in elevator code spanning from the 1970s through the 2000s, where they required the stop switch, then they had to make it a keyed stop switch. They wanted it to have an alarm bell, then it didn't have to have an alarm bell. And there... Getting through the exact differences in the different code requirements is a nightmare to explain, but emergency stops won't always behave exactly the same way. A lot of times they're toggle switches, and if there's a toggle switch in an elevator that you're riding in, you should feel a little bit less safe, because historically I think there was a sort of level of security that the stop switch provided. People didn't really trust that an elevator, you know, was safe, and that was why they were there. But the reality is that more often than not, they were actually used by bad people to do bad things to nice people that were inside the elevator. So I don't know if anybody had seen, there was a video with Jay-Z. He gets assaulted in an elevator, right? Someone is throwing punches at him, right?
Yeah, his girlfriend's sister or somebody, right?
I don't recall the details.
I don't watch TMZ.
But the stop switch is involved in that video.
She punched it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, watch it again in that context, and it changes what you're seeing because the
security guard, his security detail couldn't pull the button.
Yeah,
back
he's
out.
The security guy is frantically trying to get to the stop switch and he can't.
Yeah, but also things like just not properly securing the stop switch, not securing your hoistways and motor rooms. If you have, and a lot of facilities are not proper in this regard, man. And people who certainly weren't us have explored a lot of facilities and seen things awful.
Like the air duct that just actually does go into the hoistway for some reason.
Yeah, completely not compliant. You should never be able just to get into a hoistway from a non-hoistway door place. No. You should never, if you're in a hoistway from the wrong space, be this fucking guy.
You've heard of elevator surfing, from MIT... But this is counterweight surfing.
He's riding the counterweight. That is so nuts. And if you know who this is, he'll buy you two drinks.
Yes.
We told you we'd tell you a story about a motor room door, right? Motor room doors by code have to be what, Howard?
Self-closing, self-locking.
Is this self-closing and self-locking?
No.
But this elevator was on its finals, right? So they had to send somebody out with the right keys to go mess around in the motor room and, hello, IT, turn it off and on.
Right. So obviously it was an elevator mechanic, right? Oh, no. That's a security guard.
Yeah. Now I make it $10 an hour.
There's no way this guy is going to be able to repair what's wrong with this elevator. Now, again, he probably didn't even know what was wrong. So from the building perspective, security just knows that the elevator was out. And their standard operating procedure in this case was to simply send a guy up, throw the mainline disconnect switch, put it back in. If it fixed it, then all was good, right?
And they probably wouldn't call anyone.
Right, they would just ignore it and say, hey, I don't know what happened, but, it's working
now. Glad we're up and running.
So there's a funny story to this. Dave,
oops,
basically got banned from this facility for life for taking this picture. What happened was, as soon as he took it, the guy turns around and is like, "What are you doing?"
And I'm like, I'm taking a picture of that lock. It's fascinating.
And I remember the security guard turns to you and goes, "There's nothing fascinating about it. It's a master lock."
Yeah, so, I mean, I found that totally fascinating that was on that door. That's, like, way, way wrong.
Okay.
There's, like, 9 things wrong with that photo.
But this situation escalated extremely quickly, and before we knew it, we were surrounded by a cabal of security guards.
Yeah. We SE'd our way out of it, but, like, whatever.
Well, yeah, what was interesting was, so go to the next slide here. Instead of focusing on the fact that they didn't want us photographing in their building, I just kept arguing, what the hell is this guy doing going up there? He's clearly not trained, right? And they kind of didn't want to answer the question. They were just, you know, trying to make it, hey, no, you're breaking our rules. And I'm like, no, you're breaking the rules. And this is just going back and forth for like a half hour.
Yeah.
You know, in a very public place. It was a very big scene.
Yeah.
And they read us the trespass act.
Whatever. But, I mean, you know, you should know who, ultimately, you shouldn't be sending your security guard up there. You should know who your contractors are. You should know what they're doing in the building. You should, like, clearly these are elevator guys, right?
Right, yeah.
They belong there.
You know, like, no one would ever just kind of have the elevator outfit.
What? No, we totally have to, we have to fix the system, sir. I belong in the motor room. Fuck off. You're not authorized. So there's a lot of different kinds of people that would wear shirts like us.
Yeah. So bottom line is, though, if you're a building owner, chances are your first line of defense is just your internal facilities and operations people. They probably should not be in the motor room. If you're sending them up there for any reason, they really don't belong there. Now, you should have an elevator contractor. If you don't, God help you.
Yeah, why is there not one on file if you don't?
Now, if you have an elevator contractor but you're super cheap, you might have what's called a parts, oil, and grease contract. That's the equivalent of waiting for your transmission to blow in your car before you ever, you know, change your oil or something like that. You know, waiting for the engine to seize before you change your oil. Not a good idea. You should have a full service contract, have someone coming in there on a periodic basis, making sure everything's okay, doing preventive maintenance, doing the tests on schedule.
Now, that doesn't mean there aren't other kinds of contractors, too.
Sure.
Like this guy right here.
So, right. So, I don't actually work on elevators anymore, really. I'm a consultant now. So what do consultants do? Well, primarily, we keep tabs on what the contractors are doing on behalf of our clients. So if you own, let's say, 30 elevators, you have a pretty large elevator maintenance bill at the end of the month. And some building owners will allocate a specific percentage of their budget for it to have a consultant come in and sort of keep an eye on things and make sure that they're getting their money's worth, that the work is performed up to spec, that in general, the systems are performing up to spec.
Because you don't want this category of people to show up and tell you bad things.
So inspection is distinctly different from testing in that an inspector is generally just there to witness that the test was performed and that the result was satisfactory. There are a lot of different arrangements for that, but basically half this country doesn't actually really have dedicated elevator inspectors. It's sometimes the elevator company will do their own tests. And I like to say,
that's great.
Well, I like to say, I mean, if I could inspect my own car, I'd probably pass emissions every time.
Yeah.
So, now, there's also things like AHJ. That's where, you know, you have an actual state inspector who will come in and witness the test. Mm-hmm. So a state like Connecticut, for example.
Yeah.
Now, if you notice, though, if you're ever in an elevator in Connecticut, the inspection certificates are almost always out of date.
Yeah.
And that's because they're just so woefully understaffed.
Yeah, so the whole, ask us questions later if you're really interested in inspection and testing and how the industry does or doesn't keep up with its practices correctly. If you are a building owner, ask us about how to check up on your own MCP, like how to see if someone's doing the right maintenance controls.
Yeah, so basically the elevator industry generates a ton of paperwork that's indicating what they did, when they did it, you know, that it was performed on schedule. Your maintenance control program should look like this. Oh, no, not like this. This one's blank. Yeah. Actually, if yours looks like that, that's a problem.
Yeah, this wasn't downloaded from the internet. This was somebody's MCP on site.
This actually, believe it or not, came from a site where there was an incident, and they had months to, you know, fix the elevator and do all kinds of other things, and they just left the blank records there for us to find.
This one I loved, and anybody who does forensic handwriting analysis loves this.
So, oh, we got your test logs. So what someone did is they just said, oh, crap, we haven't been filling out the test log at all. Maybe somebody was, like, coming over as an inspection. So you could see, tell about, so the pen was, like, dry.
You could clearly see that, like, when they started writing, that the pen wasn't flowing very well. And as he was actually filling it out, it started flowing better. And then in 2006, he's decided, you know, this is taking way too long to fill this out. I'm going to stop writing my middle initial.
And then he changes. Yeah. He's like, well, it shouldn't all be the same pen. That's dumb. Let me change pens for a minute right at the end. So, like, jumper logs. You saw a jumper log once.
Yeah.
How long is the jumper supposed to be installed?
Seconds. It should only be there while the train technician is doing whatever they need to do, and that's the end of it.
When was this jumper put on and off?
I believe it was sometime in 2012.
And then?
Removed in sometime in 2013.
What the fuck? So, yeah, there's a lot of collusion that can go on. The idea, as Howard said, if the person doing your inspection is also responsible for doing the work, if someone says, oh, I don't know, those roping cables, they're looking kind of tired, you probably need to replace those, would be a shame if they failed inspection.
Well, here's the sort of problem. Who are you going to ask? If you're asking maintenance contractors, they have a vested interest in selling you maintenance, right? So sometimes you'll encounter situations like this. When tests are performed, tags are permanently affixed to the elevator components that were tested that indicate when it was tested, what the result was. In this case, Otis indicated that Otis performed the test.
Like, no, it's supposed to be, unless the guy's name was Otis, this is bullshit.
And the other thing that's weird is that it's an annual test from 1996.
And the tag's still there.
What is it doing there?
Yeah.
And I remember when this came up, they were like, well, you know.
We never really cleaned up the old tag.
We forgot to clean it.
Well, it's like, oh, I didn't remove my luggage tag.
Well, what happened to the new tag?
Yeah. Oh, we cleaned that one.
Here's another one. So there was a very high-rise building that had very expensive ropes as a result, because the more rope you need, the higher the price tag gets. The building owner was not particularly careful about monitoring their expenses when they had this contractor in there. And over the course of just a couple of years, they were told that their ropes were going bad over and over again, and they were being billed to replace the ropes. There's one problem with this. Just like when you tag a test, you tag the ropes and other certain semi-permanent components. The last time these ropes were replaced was 1972.
How much did that cost every time they had new roping?
Tens of thousands of dollars per cab.
Well worth it if you're a building owner to stay on top of this stuff. And if you're not staying on top of things, if you wind up red tagged, that is a bad frickin' day, man.
This is a little unusual, too. So this is actually an escalator at a casino in Atlantic City. What happened here is a little unclear to me. The state of New Jersey only has 8 different types of tests. This is a number 9 type of test. Your guess is as good as mine as to what that means.
It's just like all of the above, all wrong. You fail. Speaking of things failing, like doing elevator tests and doing them properly, it matters a lot. Would you like to see some fun footage of an elevator test that thankfully no humans were hurt being performed? No, you want to see humans hurt? Sorry, we don't have that footage. All right, ready? We're going to trip a governor and see if the brakes work. Let's watch that one more time. That's super fail, right? Have your tests done. Have qualified people come in. Have that happen when no one's in the car so that your ass is not getting sued to oblivion.
And, of course, follow your typical building procedures. If Steve and I show up at your location wearing these T-shirts and Tissen happens to be your contractor, that does not mean we work for Tissen, but we can probably spin a pretty good line of bullshit and work our way in if you're not careful. So with that being said, just make sure that people are following procedures. I can tell you from personal experience that just showing up on a site and saying, I'm the consultant, I'm the inspector, and actually believing it, people will pretty much let you in. And it's also very common to go through service entrances when you're a contractor like that. So
yeah, you're walking around in the back areas. No one really notices why you're there because clearly you belong there. What's the one place that actually you could not, like, just breeze in?
So the one most secure facility in my memory, it didn't even have an elevator. It was a wheelchair lift, like a little platform lift that only goes up about 3 feet. And when I entered the building, as immediately when I entered, somebody comes up to me and goes, who are you? What are you doing here? I'm like, oh, hey, I'm the elevator inspector. And they're like, okay, can I see some ID? You know, and they carded me. And this actually happened about 3 or 4 times. It was the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah. So if you're a non that's trying to get in there and cause mayhem, like, elevator ain't the route to do that, I guess.
But mad props, they followed their procedures. So.
Right on. So what does this all break down to, right? What now? If you're concerned that your elevators are going to be a mechanism of attack or something is bad in your security because you're like, oh my God, I have elevators. Understand that there is a difference between your average elevator tech and a security consultant tech. Understand that there's different levels of people in the industry, and getting to interact with someone like Howard, getting to meet you and getting to learn about this. And if you're a building owner, asking him the kind of questions that you can't ask your general, you know, just contractor guy is an incredible resource to have. So reach out to people who know. Reach out to people who can give you the right details for odd situations. Here's one little fun final couple of tips we'll give you if you're ever stuck in an elevator.
Now, when you ignore us and our disclaimers when you leave here, I just want you to keep in mind that you may find yourself entrapped. Please do not try to escape the car by prying the doors open or using the top emergency exit. That's the first thing. There are a couple things you can probably do that may actually get you out of that situation, though. First, of course, is don't panic and remember to bring a towel, of course. But you don't have to hit the emergency phone the second you get stuck, like if you're on a red team job or something like that. If the lights inside the cab are off, there's a separate emergency light usually. If the emergency light's on and the main lights are off, the power's out. That's nothing you can control. You're screwed. Hit the emergency phone. If the main lights are still on, you still have a couple options. The first thing, it's pretty simple. Just hit door open.
People panic and don't think to.
Yeah. But if in some of the 24/7 monitoring services that exist to provide that emergency phone answering service, they have a script that they follow, and one of the things they tell the people is, well, did you try hitting the door open button?
Yeah, and it actually works. Often that works.
Yeah. If that doesn't work, they'll tell you, well, try hitting door close and then hitting the door open button again. Sometimes the door operator just gets a little confused. You can try placing a call to another floor. Sometimes the lobby will be not locked out, but maybe guest floors in a hotel will be locked out, and you just are located somewhere where you can't open the doors. So make sure you try, of course, all the different buttons.
All your badges.
Try your badges. If you are an authorized user, you can try some key switches.
Yeah. And if all of that still doesn't work, there's one other thing maybe you could do.
And I say this with extreme hesitance and caution, but if you take the palm of your hand and touch it to the flat surface of the door, see if it's moving at all. Don't try to pry it open. Don't stick your hand in the gap if it's a biparting door that splits in the middle. Do not stick your hand in there. But just see if the door is moving at all. If it does move, try to slide them closed together gently. Occasionally, the door just isn't closed. And if the door's not closed, the elevator won't run.
And if none of that works, go ahead and call for help. If none of that works, don't try the fucking top hatch. I don't care if someone who's a bozo, like, I don't know, Ross and Friends or somebody did it once. I don't freaking know. But, like, don't go out the top hatch. Even if you think you can get it open or push it open or, oh, my God, this one's unlocked, it's not getting you anywhere useful.
Yeah, or the side exit, if applicable.
Yeah, some elevators have side exits. Ask him later about that. It's a funny story. Don't exit a misleveled car. Absolutely, the rule of thumb, if you have to jump, it is too far. And I know, like, oh, my God, this elevator's not working right, and I can make it. It's right there. I really want to get out of this elevator. I'm panicking, man. What was that one lady that...
It was a case at Caltech. There was a woman named Annette Lujan who was fatally crushed that way. The elevator had stalled. She was able to get the doors open from the inside, and then two bystanders said, hey, we can help you out. You know, grab our hands. We'll pull you out. The elevator moved unexpectedly, and she was fatally crushed.
Yeah. Stay inside the elevator itself. Even if you might not be comfortable, the safest place to be is in the elevator, believe it or not. The elevator wants to keep you alive. We wanted to keep you alive. We hope you learned a lot. We hope you had fun. Thank you very much. So do we actually have a minute or two for questions, or are we booting off? Somebody give us a lighter. Oh, wait, we got a guy right at the mic, and we got a hand. I don't know what you're waving at. What is your question, sir?
My question is, so there's a lot of stuff that you say, don't try it at home. What are the safest things you can do to mess with an elevator? Like pulling the emergency, you see that in movies a lot, or TV. People push the emergency stop button or pull it or whatever. Like, is that going to usually trigger grievous responses of alarms and things happening? Like
most run stop switches are alarms, so avoid it if you can. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is actually hitting the run stop switch will bring the elevator to a very abrupt stop, and it is possible to cause mechanical damage by doing that. So if you don't know the job, I would definitely avoid doing that. In terms of the quote-unquote safest thing to do, that's a tough question to answer, but pretty much anything inside the cab, usually you're still at least safe. The Hotel Pennsylvania
elevator. Are the Hotel Pennsylvania elevators safe? No comment.
So I was in Canada, and the elevator had a light on it that said shuffle, and it also had an indicator that would say servicing other floors.
Yes. I believe you're referring to Toronto somewhere.
Yes.
I've seen pictures of that. I believe what that is, there's, a mythos to it online. And what people have explained is that, well, it's for Otis guys to get on top of the car. That is absolutely false. First of all, Otis never talks about their proprietary technology if they can avoid it. So they would never make a statement like that. The second thing is, I believe those are double-deck elevators. What the shuffle button is, as it was explained to me, was that somebody could press the button. It would actually allow them to switch whether they were going to an odd or an even floor, because it would only serve odd or even floors.
Oh, okay, I got you, because it's two cabs.
Right, so in other words, it would basically let you off, shift up a bit, and then actually allow you to step on the other side. Or the other cab, excuse me.
2 minutes left.
Okay,
I'm good.
So you guys talked about movies but not television shows, and 80s sitcoms would have me believe if I'm desperately in labor, I'm going to get stuck between floors. So how common, actually, is that, to be stuck in between a floor for hours and hours?
Well, entrapments are fairly common, I would say. Most buildings will experience them a couple times a year if it's a large enough place. A place like the Hotel Penn actually probably has to happen at least on a weekly basis, just on the number of elevators that they have. And that's just speculation. But the long and the short of it is, yes, a disproportionate number of babies are born in elevators.
Yes, sir.
That too.
Hi. On cameras in elevators, are they normally closely watched? And does anyone notice if you do turn them off using some sort of little device? Or is it
cameras in elevators, are they being watched? No more or less than most cameras in buildings. Most of the time, they're for reconstruction after an incident.
There are also local cameras that are not connected to a central station in the building, where they'll just have a little SD card in it that's constantly looping, so that when an event happens, they're able to go pull the SD card and see what actually happened.
So if you put a key in, there's not going to be someone just rushing the door likely to, watching.
It didn't happen at all this weekend.
Depends where you are.
1 minute left or less. Your question, then everybody else. We're going to talk to you downstairs in the Lockpick Village. We're going to set all this up in the Lockpick Village. What is your question?
Go ahead. I'm going to ask later.
Downstairs? All right. You, sir, the last question.
Okay.
Make it good.
I was a naughty boy when
Don't suck.
When I was moving, I had a box holding the elevator as I was unloading it, because there was no mode for, a freight elevator.
Yes.
The elevator very slowly went up and tipped the box into the floor very politely as the door stayed open, as I could see the shaft, and the elevator slid all the way up. How many errors occurred there, and why did the elevator slide away?
It's possible that the brakes were bad. It's possible that the brake tension wasn't high enough. It's a little bit more common than you might think. There's a specific video on YouTube that I'll refer you to that actually shows a situation where an elevator mechanic was inside a cab when that exact type of situation occurred. That's what those rope gripper safeties are intended to prevent.
Yeah, he was talking about the floor was actually pushing his possessions, not nudging, which the elevator will do more and more angrily if you keep holding a door open.
Correct.
And that also meant that the building owner went and corrected it. He ran up into the tower and pressed a reset button or something to regain the control of the elevator.
No.
Because
that's how they closed the door.
That's my answer to that.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you to Ted for recording this. We'll have DVDs of it. He wants, show your friends. We had fun. First time he gave a talk at a con right here. Howard Payne, ladies and gentlemen.